a dim bone, dim bone, dim.
Welcome to MRCS on the Move. Bowels, bones, and backseat vibers. I'm your host, Naomi, but this is the podcast where you do the talking. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of MRCS on the Move. It's a pleasure, as always, to be here with you. I just wanted to start by saying thank you to all those who have reached out and given me positive feedback. It's really encouraging. It's just great to hear it. So I really thank you for that. We're going to do an episode today on transplantation. I don't think, and I've been told by reliable sources, that you need to know loads about transplantation. So I'm going to cover the things I have been told are important. Hopefully it won't be too long an episode and it will get you to or home from work. Yeah, let's crack on. Okay, starting simple to get us warmed up. What organs can be transplanted? Okay, the heart, the lungs, the liver, the pancreas, the cornea, the small bowel, bones, tendons, and skin. That's about all of them. Who would you class as being an ideal donor? So ideal donors are generally the young and previously fit, and those that are donated after brain death. So that's to introduce the term DBD donors. So donation after brain death. Who would be a marginal donor? So it would include elderly patients, those with comorbidities, specifically including sort of diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, and then those that are donation after cardiac death. So again, another term, DCD donors, so donation after cardiac death donors. What are the absolute contraindications to transplantation? Malignancy, viruses including Hep B, Hep C, and HIV, severe damage to the organs, so maybe that's post-trauma or something, sepsis, and then finally a refusal of consent by a patient. So I've mentioned them, kind of given you the answer, but what are the two types of donors? Donation following brain death, donation following cardiac death. So DBD donors, DCD donors. What is the definition of brainstem death? So it's the absence of brainstem reflexes, motor response, and respiratory drive. So absence of brainstem reflexes, motor response, and respiratory drive in a deeply unconscious patient with an irreversible widespread brain injury of known cause with no contributing metabolic derangement. So say that again to yourself, that definition. Smashing, brilliant. Who can confirm brainstem death? So it must be performed by two doctors. At least one of them is a consultant. Both of them have been practicing for 5 years. They must not have any link to the transplant team, and there must be no ulterior motive. It also must be performed twice. What criteria must be met to begin testing someone for brainstem death? The patient must be normothermic, have no significant hormonal or electrolyte imbalances. They must be requiring mechanical ventilation, must not be on any sedatives or muscle relaxants, and there must be no cardiovascular instability. Okay. Right, on to how we test for brainstem death. So what do you test? Tell me. Okay, so there are six reflexes you test for brainstem death, and you test for apnea. So you're testing the brainstem function with the cranial nerves, and then the presence of respiration or not. So your six brainstem reflexes that you test, I've got an acronym for you. So patient care can overcome great pain. Oh, it's quite a nice one. Patient care can overcome great pain. So P for patient is pupils, corneal care, cough, can, overcome is ocular vestibular, great is gag, and pain is pain response. So pupils, corneal, cough, ocular vestibular, gag, and pain. Okay? Each of them have an afferent and an efferent arm that are going to cause the reflex. Okay? Then you have the test of respiration. So they have to have all respiratory support removed and have apnea for 5 minutes. And then you test that with an arterial blood gas where their PCO2 should rise by more than 0.5 kilopascals. So what is meant by donation after brain death? It's quite a simple question really, but donors who fulfill all brainstem death criteria. What is meant after donation? Sorry, what is meant by donation after cardiac death? So these can be divided into two different types. So essentially, they're sort of uncontrolled. They're called donation after cardiac death. That is pulseless asystole after an adequate but unsuccessful resuscitation, and then controlled cardiac death, which is sort of a deeply comatose patient who's in a vegetative state but doesn't strictly meet the criteria of brainstem death. So sort of uncontrolled fashion, they've had a cardiac arrest and they've not come back from it, or they are a deeply comatose patient whose life support is then switched off but they don't meet the brainstem death criteria. Okay, tell me a bit about the intervals that you know, the time intervals that you're aware of in the whole transplant process. So I left you a fair amount of time there, but that's because there's a few, and they can maybe be a bit hard to get your head around sometimes. So you've got your initial warm ischemic time. That is in DCD donors only. And it's the time between a significant drop in blood pressure to perfusion with your cold preservative fluid. So initial warm ischemia, okay? Drop in blood pressure to cold perfusion fluid. Cold ischemia time is the time from the perfusion with the cold fluid, so they're cold, to perfusion with the recipient's blood. So cold fluid goes in, it's the cold ischemic time. The warm ischemic time is you're moving it from the ice, you're taking it away from the cold, so it's warm, and then to the point it's infused with the blood. So this time is going to be when the organ is being implanted, so the sort of suturing time. Anastomosis time. Okay, what factors affect the outcome of a graft? So I would divide these into patient and recipient factors, and then the actual compatibility of the transplant. So your patient and recipient factors will be the age of the patient, the comorbidities, which affects the underlying quality of the organ that's being donated, the performance status of a patient, the immunosuppression that's used. Moving on, then you've obviously got the compatibility of the two grafts, so their major histocompatibility and their ABO compatibility. And other things that factors, just a few extra that impact it, would be your initial warm ischemic specifically and your cold ischemic times. And then finally, DBD donors have a better outcome generally. Okie dokie, we have hit 10 minutes. Let's have our usual halftime break. I will see you back here in a minute or so. Wonder how I pick those songs, but I basically go by the genre I feel like you might want to feel. That one was happy and laid back. Hope you now feel happy and laid back to rock right back into it. Anyway, I don't know if you like the jingles or the music, but I do, so they're staying there for now. Okay. Next question, what types of transplants do you know and which ones cause an immune response generally, much more likely to cause one? So you've got your autograft transplant, which is from same person, so you transplanting from you to you. So it's one area to another, i.e. a vein graft or a skin graft. Bit like, I remember it like autobiography, like it's your writing it and it's your transplant. And then isograft is a transplant between genetically identical individuals. Allograft, transplant of tissue or organs between non-identical individuals. And then xenograft is between different species. And it's xenograft and allograft are the ones that are going to cause your immune response. Can you simply describe the pathophysiology of graft rejection? So it's an acquired immune response mediated by T cells and antibodies. So donor antigens are presented to lymphocytes by the donor or the recipient antigen presenting cells. So that's things like macrophages or dendritic cells. So the donor antigens on the donor cells on the graft are presented by antigen presenting cells. They are presented with, so in combination with, the major histocompatibility complexes. And in humans, these are called your human leukocyte antigens, so your HLA antigens. They are on the cells of the donor. It's a foreign antigen that is presented to the T cell receptors, so the foreign from the donor. The T cells then cause graft damage through cytokine-mediated inflammation and cell lysis. B cells are recruited by CD4 T cells and they stimulate the production of antibodies against the graft. So you've got direct damage by cytokines, which are released by T cells, and then the production of antibodies, which on top of that damage the grafts. So T cell mediated responding to donor antigens. Okay, I really struggle with this stuff. So it's important to sort of go over it, write it down, do whatever you need to do. Okay, what are the different types of rejection? Okay, so again, a lot of information in this answer, but you have, there's three types of reaction. So it's hyperacute, acute, and chronic. So hyperacute occurs within minutes to hours of the transplant. It's due to preformed antibodies against the donor and can occur following, for example, an ABO incompatibility. It leads to rapid activation of the intimal and adaptive immune system, and results in platelet adhesion and thrombosis and essentially destruction of the graft, and it won't survive. Acute reaction occurs weeks to roughly 6 months. Most happen less than 6 months. About 30% of transplants will experience acute reactions. They're T cell mediated. They cause destruction of the donor organ, and HLA typing reduces this risk. They're treated with steroids and immunosuppression. Chronic occurs months to years. The cause is a bit unknown, but it's thought to possibly be antibody mediated, and it's characterized by fibrosis, and atherosclerosis. There's no treatment, and they require a retransplantation, essentially. Okay, so going on to the last question. Tell me what treatments you know about in treating transplant rejection. So I divide these into non-biologics and biologics. So non-biologics is most of them, so that includes steroids, hydrocortisone, prednisolone, methylprednisolone, and then immunosuppressants. So that would be your tacrolimus, cyclosporins, your azathioprines, and your mycophenolate mofetil. And an example of a biological medication would be basiliximab. Oh, that's the best I've ever said that word. There you go. Just say it quickly, basiliximab. Okay, so essentially your steroids, your immunosuppressants, and biologics. Righty-ho. So I'm going to wrap it up there. I hope that's enough for you today. Again, I would appreciate any feedback, any likes on Instagram or Twitter, and please do share me with any of your friends if you'd like to, if you think they'd benefit. Take care all, have a lovely evening. I'm gonna pour myself a G&T now. Please feel free to join. See you on the next ride. Ta-ta. Ooh, well, a dim-bone, dim-bone, dim-bone.